Find her expert advice anytime at thinkblink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750 News Talk WSB.
Everybody, welcome back. It is the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours, here on News Talk WSB. Our number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time. If you haven't joined my newsletter, you are missing out. So thinkglink.com, that's the website, thinkglink.com. Follow me on Twitter, I've already started tweeting today, that is at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Lines are wide open. Happy to share any help that I can give you to rebuild your own home. So I had a couple of emails this week about this whole rebuilding America one house at a time thing that we're doing this year. And somebody just said, what do you mean by rebuilding America? Because we're all in our own bubbles, right? We live in a bubble. We've got our family, immediate family and friends as part of that, and we read the news and we, you know, get access to touch points, right, inflection points to the larger world and how it affects us. But we're still in our bubble or our silos. And what I feel needs to happen now is that we all, collectively and individually, need to reclaim ownership over our personal finances. So for you, it's about rebuilding your America, your silo first and foremost, your personal finances, your financial home. It's reclaiming ownership over your small business or your job, whatever you do day in and day out. It's about selling and buying and moving into the best home that you can truly afford, providing four walls, a floor, and a ceiling for your life partner, your children, your grandchildren. And what I've come to understand is I watch the country struggling to get past this great recession. And mind you, we are so on the edge. I mean, the fact that we contracted at all in the fourth quarter of the year was just astonishing. And truly, I talk to small business owners every single day across the country. What they're telling me is they lost half their business in December. Small businesses, right? This should have been a time when everything was going gangbusters, and yet it's not, right? The reality is for 85-90% of America, the recession never ended. And there's the 5 or 10%, not even just the 1% at the top, but the 5 to 10%, you've got a job, job's going okay, you feel in control, you're spending money, you're going out and buying your Coach bags, whatever. But there's a large section of America where things aren't going that well. And if you don't rebuild your slice of the American dream, your silo, your bubble, and all of your neighbors don't work on rebuilding theirs, then blocks don't get better. Right? You stand on your doorstep and you look around and you say, how many foreclosures can I see? And I don't mean just down the block. Maybe those have been cleaned up. What about the next block and the next block after that? Neighborhoods don't get better if blocks don't get better. Communities don't get better if the neighborhoods don't get better. Cities don't get better if communities don't get better. And then none of us get better as a country. So rebuilding America is about protecting yourself. It's about making sure your foundation is secure so that when the next recession hits, and I keep telling you it's coming, maybe not as bad as the last time. God, I hope not. But it's coming. When that hits, you're prepared. I want you to be prepared and survive and thrive. We are in trouble economically. We talked about it last week. I spent all week talking to different people, economists and experts and industry observers in the real estate world. You haven't seen real estate really come back. I keep hearing about how it's 15% better than last year. Well, last year was awful. Last year was almost the worst year we ever had for new construction. It was like the second worst. So we're selling around 300,000 new homes. we should be selling 800,000. So we're like 60% below the mid-level norm. We're about, 85% below where we were at the height of the boom. That's not a housing recovery. That is a housing depression. And we've never had a recovery where housing didn't lead us out of it since, like, World War II, since the 1940s. So a lot of recessions come and gone, and housing has always led the way out, except for this one, which leads me to believe we're not really out of it yet. We're not. You don't get better. The block doesn't get better. The neighborhood doesn't get better. Your community doesn't get better. Your city doesn't get better. The country doesn't get better. So when we talk on the show, and we did last week, about the recession that even though the numbers don't officially call it a recession yet, right, you need two quarters of contraction back to back to be officially in a recession. So minus 0.1% doesn't really, it's within the margin of error. We could have been plus 0.1%. Came out on the other side. The whole point is that the economy is so fragile. It's being held together with, like, chewing gum from the Federal Reserve and all the other central banks in the rest of the world. Everybody's doing the same thing. So we're just not out of the woods yet. Not. Not by a long shot. We have so far to go with the rebuilding. Your rebuilding. My rebuilding. Everybody out there trying to build something real. Not just push papers around. Not just, you know, sort of do a little magic trick with derivatives. Right? Real rebuilding. I was with my friend Erica yesterday. And Erica runs a small business. She gives facials. And she's amazing. And I've been going to see her for a very long time. And I said to her, Erica, how's it going? Because when times get tough, the first thing that happens is women stop getting manicures as often. It's an easy thing to give up. So you go once a week, normally, if things are okay. You go every other week or every third week if they're not. And same thing with facials, right? You know, these kinds of body personalized services, they feel good, they make us feel young and whatever, but it's an easy thing to give up, let's be honest. She told me her business got cut in half over the Christmas period, like November and December, and she could feel it in January because nothing got better. She said, I'm still here in February, and she just sent out a little Valentine's Day promotion, which got some response, not nearly as much as in years past. She's doing every single thing she can think of to drive business into her shop. And it's just not happening. It's not happening for her. I walked by the manicure salon in my neighborhood, the building actually where my office is, and the three women were sitting around on a Friday afternoon where they should have been really busy, sitting around playing cards, chatting with each other. There was no business. They were just sitting around. We're not out of the woods. It's fragile. It's being held together with cash. I call it chewing gum, but I'm being facetious, obviously. It's being held together with cash from the Federal Reserve. The spending by the government is there to try and make it happen. To try to get us to a place where the underlying economy can actually support what's going on. And we're not there yet. We're just not there yet. So I wanted to give you the first of my five Rebuilding America rules today, because I really believe that if we don't start in our own home, our financial home, our actual home, our neighborhood home, the house we live in, the job we do, if we don't start in our houses, my house, you start in yours, we're not going to get there. So the first rule is you've got to get yourself to ground zero. You've got to be honest with yourself about where you are, wherever that is. This isn't a judgment call. I just want you to figure out where you are, whether you have a job or not. There are a lot of people who are still unemployed and underemployed in this country. whether you're in foreclosure or you're not. Maybe you have to do a short sale. Wherever you are, you have to be honest. And being honest about where you are financially is the way you get to ground zero. It's a way of recognizing this is the baseline. If you're underwater, you've got some equity, great. But everybody has a ground zero point. Where are you today? And where do you want to go? So I've always, you know, if you've listened to the show, I have always been into big goals. Dream big, folks. I've lived my whole life like that. Dream big, because there are so few things that you really need to be Einstein genius level to do, right? You can do it. So you've got to get yourself to ground zero, be honest where you are, and be honest about where you want to go. Rule number two, you've got to take the pain now. You can't defer it anymore. So get out. If you are in a place that's incredibly painful, or you think will be painful if you go there, I'm telling you this, just go there now. It's, you know, if you've got a long list of things to do, right, the natural inclination is to put the thing that you least want to do, right, at the bottom of the list. You want to do all the other things first because they're easier, and then what happens? You run out of time, energy, emotional energy, intellectual energy to deal with the thing that's the last thing on your list. I want you to put that last thing first. I want you to reverse the list. I want you to take the pain now because it will be less painful. You'll get through it. It'll be in the past. You draw a line in the sand and you move forward. That's rule number two. Number three, make strategic decisions, not emotional ones. We've been all over the place emotionally since 2008. It has been a rough roller coaster. And it's scary. I know it's scary. But if you don't start making strategic decisions about your work, about your financial house, about the house you live in, you're not going to be able to move past the pain point. You're just not. Rule number four, whatever you buy, I want you to underbuy rather than overbuy. And I'm not talking about overpaying. Not talking about overpaying. I'm talking about spending less than you absolutely can. And this may go contrary to everything that you have heard about real estate. But I don't care. I want you to be secure. And the only way to get that is to underbuy. So it comes to Christmas presents, underbuy. Don't spend every last cent. Don't give 20 gifts to your kids and grandkids. Give them one thoughtful, special thing from you, and it will be enough. Don't buy the biggest house you can afford. Buy a little bit less. It's okay. You'll have extra money. You'll have options. You'll feel secure. You'll feel strong. Don't buy the most. Underbuy. And my fifth rule, which, again, it won't come as a surprise to you, right? Because you've been listening to me for all these years. I need you to read every single word before you sign on the dotted line of every contract. I don't care if the mortgage document is 160 pages. Most of them will be between 40 and 80. Read the language. If you don't understand, hire somebody to help you understand. We have gotten into so much trouble in this country because people just sign whatever is put in front of them. There's a dotted line, and it's almost like you can't hold your arm back from signing on the dotted line. Enough, right? Take responsibility. Own that signature. Understand that when you sign, it is your liability on the line. Your house, your financial house, the house that you live in, everything rides on that signature. And I needed you to take ownership of that. So get yourself to ground zero. Take the pain now. Don't defer it. Make your decision a strategic decision, not an emotional one. Whatever you buy, underbuy. Don't overbuy. And don't sign until you read every single word. All right. I'm going to open up the lines, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. We are going to take, we've got Real Estate Insight coming up with Rhonda Duffy, and then we're going to take your calls next on News Talk WSB. Back, everybody, to the Elise Blink Show, live on Sundays 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, and let's start with yours. We have Rhonda Duffy with us for Real Estate Insight. Rhonda, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
So, what can buyers expect when they go and look at homes that are for sale on the market? What should they expect?
Well, they should expect a clean house, right?
For sure.
I don't have any buyers signing up for a used toilet. Right? They want something that looks clean. And I'll tell you, one trick, this thing, I don't know if you've ever used this. Have you ever used the Mr. Clean Magic Sponge?
I have. I love it.
Yes.
It's like that white little sponge, and you rub it on your wall, and it takes out the marks.
Yeah. The whole wall that you thought you were going to have to paint now looks beautiful, right? Well, use that around your toilet, all your fixtures, all your grout, you know. Use it everywhere you can, because a clean house makes money.
You know, but I just have to jump in and say my mother, who's been a real estate agent for years, would tell me horror stories about walking in and there's dirty underwear and unmade beds and people sometimes sleeping in the beds and all kinds of things.
Well, it's not even that. It's just, you know, you want to present a house. Now, some people get confused and they say, well, I've got to present a museum. No, you've got to present a lifestyle. And people typically want to pay for somebody else's clean. This is the same thing. Look, cars are easier to sell. We would go and have them detailed if we were going to trade them in at the dealership, right?
Sure.
Just do the same thing with your house. And this is really not a sprint. This is a marathon. You got to keep the juice flowing throughout the process. But one thing that we know for sure, every study has proven, a clean house pays more than a dirty house. So buyers expect clean. They'd like to have lights on. They like jazz music. We've surveyed buyers. They love jazz music, okay? But jazz music has an upbeat feel. It gives a lifestyle impression.
All right, so we don't want any Thelonious Monk jazz music is not what we're talking about.
Right, we're talking about upbeat lifestyle
little
jazz.
Little Brubeck.
Right.
We want music 101 or
right.
whatever
we,
it is.
We want a lifestyle.
Lifestyle.
And that's what you've got to project as you are selling a property.
Great points. I expect you've got more on your blog.
Of course, RhondaDuffy.com.
All right, folks, be sure to check it out, RhondaDuffy.com. This is Real Estate Insight. I'm Elise Blink, Rebuilding America, one house at a time. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more on News Talk WSB. It's 11:35 on News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Blink. I'm really glad you joined me today. Our number, 404-872-0750, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. 1-800-WSB-TALK. Tune in to the ThinkLink community via the newsletter, thinklink.com, or follow me on Twitter, @Glink, @GLINK. All right, let's answer some questions today. Brett joins us on the line from Atlanta. Hi, Brett.
Hello, Elise. How are you today?
I'm doing great. What about you?
Oh, pretty fine, pretty fine. I'm doing a lot better financially now.
What happened to you? It sounds like you went through the ringer.
Well, actually, my parents actually left me part of their house is mine now because of a qualified personal residence trust.
Yeah.
And I was just my dad.
Who owns the other house? Who owns the other piece of it?
My brother-in-law and his two children.
Okay.
And we just want to know, because my dad is still alive and living in the house, we want to know how best for him to pay rent to us, or what we need to do, I mean, as far as the tax issues here.
Right. So let's take a step back. So when did they put the house, or your parents put the house, into the Qualified Personal Residence Trust?
I think it was about 11 years ago.
Okay. And has it actually transferred then to
yes,
you?
Yes, it has.
So you now own this property with your brother-in-law. Did you have a sister who passed away?
That is correct.
Yes. I'm sorry. So are you and your brother-in-law on good terms?
Oh, very good terms, yes.
That's nice. So your dad is in the property. He's now your tenant.
Right.
And have you established what he's going to pay in rent for the property?
Yes, we have a fair market estimation of what the rent would be for
okay.
the property.
So the way this typically works is that he pays you, And now you have to pay all the expenses because
right.
you're landlords.
Right.
So you would pay, I assume there's no mortgage on the property.
There's no mortgage on the property.
And so you're just paying property taxes. What you want to do is make sure the property taxes get sent to you and your brother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
Or to whoever's going to be the person in charge of this.
Mm-hmm.
So who's getting the check from your dad?
I am getting it, and I am distributing it to my brother-in-law and his children.
Right, but you have to make sure that you hold back enough for, you're required to do the maintenance and the taxes and whatever other expenses come up.
Right.
So you want to make sure that you're holding enough back. Now, one thing that often happens with these is that the tenant, your dad, will
right.
pay all the maintenance expenses going forward.
Mm-hmm.
And, or if he's just giving you a check, like sometimes parents will give their kids a dollar, but they'll take all, care of all the expenses. They'll pay... the property taxes, and we'll pay the maintenance and the upkeep and whatever needs to happen to the property. In your case, it sounds like he's actually giving you a check, so then you have to make those payments.
Exactly.
Okay, so make them.
Okay.
Go, you know, you should have a lease, a proper written lease, just in case the IRS ever knocks at your door. Make
right.
sure you keep that documentation.
Mm-hmm.
Call the local tax body and have them start sending you the taxes. You have to make sure that the property has actually been transferred to your name and your brother-in-law's name. And the two of you need to have a partnership agreement that dictates how you actually own this property and what happens to it, who's responsible for what, and how it's, you know, what's going to happen once it gets passed down. And what you may want to do is just leave it in the trust, and now that you and your brother-in-law own it, you may want to name his two children and any children that you have as beneficiaries of the trust.
All right.
So that's something that you want to clean up as well.
Great. Great. Are there any other tax issues that that I would be have to be aware of?
You've now received this property, and you will have to figure out or talk to your tax preparer about how it's going to affect your taxes every year, because now it's an investment property.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, you no longer will inherit it. Right?
Right.
So you've now received it, and you have to find out what price you've received it at. So usually with a qualified personal residence trust, there's some sort of discount on the price, the value of the property as it transfers over. And you need to find out more information about that and how it will affect you as a rental property, because you'll be required to show that to the IRS, that you have this rental property and you're receiving income from it. You'll have to show expenses against it. You'll have to depreciate it. And there's this is not that simple. So you probably want to get on that pretty quickly. 40 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. We are rebuilding America one house at a time. Matthew, what's going on with yours? Matthew?
Yes, ma'am.
Welcome to the program.
Nice to talk to you. You're
sure.
Pretty awesome.
Well, thank you.
I am now 34, and I didn't make the best financial decisions in my past. I didn't get into debt or anything, apart from money my parents loaned me, but I was unemployed for 2 years and pretty much depreciated all of my savings in that time. But as a result of those various issues, I've only saved about $5,000 for retirement, which at 34 I know is horribly insufficient. I should have had more than that saved up at 24. So I'm just trying to figure out, I can put 30% of my pay into a 401k, and of course I can also do a Roth IRA as well. And I'm seriously thinking about maxing both of those out. I was just wondering if you thought that might be a little overkill.
I don't think you can ever save too much for retirement. You know why?
Because bad things can happen.
Well, bad things have happened to you.
Yep.
But the thing is that if you have too much money saved in retirement, let's just imagine a world where you have too much money. It just gives you options. It gives you options to pass it down to your own children, or if you don't have any nieces and nephews, or to help people less fortunate. It allows you to travel the world, or to play golf every day, or just sit in your house and watch Oprah reruns. It gives you the opportunity to make a difference.
That's true.
So too much money, I can't even imagine. My only hope is that if you have too much money, you're not wasting it on, you know, several big, you know, multi-million dollar yachts, which would
Oh, no. I'm not making that much money. I'm making... But
here's what I love, Matthew. Here's what I love. I love that you said to me that you can put 30% of my pay into a 401k and do a Roth IRA. If you could actually do that, if you could do both of those things, you would actually be able to catch up so much faster. And you've got at least 35 years to go before you retire. Like, the age now is 67, but it's probably going to go up to 69. You're 34. It's 35 years.
You've got
so much time. And I love that you've woken up and you've said, I should have had this when I was in my mid-20s. Okay, true. But you've got 35 years to go, and you're ready to get going. So how can I help you take that first step?
I'm not really sure. I've talked with Charles Schwab and where my Roth IRA is, and I guess I need to talk with somebody where my 401k is and see what they recommend. Because they've got, like, pre-planned out packages based on how many years out you plan on retiring.
Right.
And it's all based on that. So I kind of load-based it between, I think, 25 and 30. But
Here's what I think you should do. Charles Schwab is just fine. Charles Schwab, Fidelity, TIA, Kraft, they're all wonderful, Vanguard, they're all wonderful financial services companies that offer lots of resources to somebody like you.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got a Roth IRA, I want you to max it out. If you've got a 401k, I want you to max it out. If you can save through those vehicles and then into a rainy day fund 25% or more of your gross annual income, you will very quickly catch up to where you should have been, and by then it's going to be such a habit that you won't be able to envision any other way to live, which is exactly what you want to do. You are rebuilding your house, your financial house. You've recognized what you have to do. I would say you already hit ground zero. I talked about this at the beginning of the show. You got to hit ground zero first and really recognize where you are and own that. And you've done that, Matthew. That's great.
Oh, yeah. Well, it helped that when after I was unemployed, I got a job as basically a temp, horribly underpaid. So between being unemployed and being a temp, I cut out every expense I could. My cell phone plan's $10 a month on my parents' plan. I've got no TV, no internet, no unnecessary expenses whatsoever. So when I got hired on and my pay went up, not great, but decent, I continued to live as if I was making that temp pay.
That's amazing.
Have been saving up everything I can.
That's awesome. That is great stuff. It's exactly what you have to do to rebuild your life. And you're doing it. So, you know, all hail Matthew, because that's the example that we have to set for everyone else. And you know what? I bet you're just fine living without TV for a little while.
Oh, yeah. I got more important things to do than watch TV anyway.
I think you're going to want to count your money. That seems like you're going to have a lot of work to do that, because if you keep on this path, you are going to have all those options in retirement, and you will see within a few years just how quickly living at that baseline is going to add up. It's going to really add up for you. So way to go.
I appreciate it. And as I said to somebody, because they're like, you know, you never spend any money on yourself. It's like, look, I can have a nicer life now, or I can have a more comfortable life when I retire. I'm fine with the way things are now.
I can't add anything more to that. That is the best story I've heard so far today.
Awesome.
Let me know will you stay in touch and let me know how it goes?
Sure, I can do that. Thanks, Elise.
You're welcome, Matthew. Have a great Sunday. 47 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. I have this huge grin on my face right now because of Matthew. Way to go, Matthew. All right. Let's continue on with some calls. Linda joins us on the line from Jonesboro. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Elise. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm still smiling from my conversation with Matthew. What's going on in your world?
Well, I have a rental house, and the tenants here find it very hard to buy it. Not thinking maybe once they clean up their credit and get everything in order, they're going to purchase it because they've asked me several times. My thing is, should I try to refinance it under one of the government programs? If I know I'm going to be selling it within the next 2 years.
Let me ask you something. So your house is underwater or not underwater?
It's underwater.
It is underwater, and these tenants want to buy it in 2 years?
Yes.
And how are they going to do that if you're underwater? Is the value of the house going up?
No, not at the moment. They're trying to save as much money as possible, and this is their first-time homeowners or home buyers. Or I think they'll qualify for several of the programs that's already out there.
All right, let me jump in. The connection's not terrific, so I want to give you a little reality check, and I want to make sure you really can hear me. If you are underwater, that is, if the value of your house is less than what you owe, when these people buy your property, they're not going to be able to buy it at a place that you're going to be able to afford to come out even. You need to come out even, or you are going to be in a short sale. And if you're in a short sale position, that means you're going to need your lender to approve their purchase. And if you want to, you know, refinance your house now, the problem that you're going to have is it's an investment property, and it's very difficult under HARP. They do allow rental properties to be refinanced. That is a new thing with HARP, H-A-R-P, right? So go to makinghomeaffordable.gov, and you can check out and see what you can do, and you can talk to your lender. If you can refinance for the next 2 years, you probably should. And then you should take every dime that you're saving and pay down that loan so that when the time comes for those homeowners to buy your property, you're not underwater. Because if you can avoid doing a short sale, that's exactly what I want you to do. Because what you'll do is avoid damaging your credit. Avoid putting yourself out of pocket for 2 years. Avoid having everything come after you. Because if you have other assets, the lender may say, I'm not doing a short sale. You sell those other assets and come to the table and pay us off in full. So try to refinance, even if it's just for 2 or 3 years, and then pour every dime. Take a page off of Matthew's book, and every dime that you can, get that house to parity, so that you don't have to worry when the time comes to sell. 404-872-0750. Follow me on Twitter. I'm at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. We are rebuilding America here on the Elise Glink Show, one house at a time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live and here to guide you through your money and real estate questions, only on 95.5 FM and AM 750, News Talk WSB.
56 minutes past the hour on News Talk WSB, the Elise Glink Show. Thanks for listening today. We have a whole other hour after this. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Let's go back to the phone lines. Jerry joins us on the line from Atlanta. So, Jerry, what's going on with your wife?
Well, it's a long-standing problem. She just doesn't understand the value of money, and she's spending it. I mean, I don't want to go into a lot of detail, but she is way overspending our budgets.
Does she work?
Dramatically.
Does she work, Jerry?
No, she does not.
What does she do all day? Well, she's clearly spending money all day long.
Well, actually, she's a sickly person as well, and so unfortunately she spent a lot of time in bed. I think this is sometimes a diversion for her, but I've got a whole spare bedroom full of clothes, and it's largely clothes and personal, you know, things.
You have to talk to her about
to her.
then you have to cut her off.
I've tried to do that.
And what happened?
It's really hard.
It is really hard.
It's very hard. First of all, she has credit cards in her name. She's promised me over and over on multiple occasions over several years that she's going to stop, but she never does. And one of the things that irritates the heck out of me is these credit card companies. You know, if the card is in her name, I don't have any control over it.
Well, let's talk about this. We're going to take a quick break. We have to do some news, weather, and traffic. But I want you to hang with us. I want to talk a little bit about what happens when people don't take care of their financial house. And she's not, and there may be some real reasons for that, and what you can do to protect yourself. But the good news is that if it's the credit card is in her name alone without you on it, that you won't be held responsible for those. And we'll talk about the exceptions to that when we come back. I'm Elise Glink, rebuilding America one house at a time, here on News Talk WSB.
It's live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on 95.5 FM and AM 750, News Talk WSB.
It's 6 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink. Thanks for listening to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays here at 11 to 1, where we are rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. The number, 404-872-0750, if you're listening online, 1-800-WSB-TALK, to join the conversation. How are you rebuilding your house, your financial house, your personal house, your small business? What are you doing to get to ground zero, draw a line in the sand, and move forward? That's what we're talking about on today's show. Jerry is on the phone with us. His wife has been spending them into debt. And, Jerry, I was thinking during the break that you must be so frustrated right now. You must just not know what to do, because you look at your future and think, you want to have some security. You want to understand that you have options, and the spare bedroom full of clothes and garbage that she's bought isn't helping you.
Well, that's absolutely correct. And the other aspect of this is I'm retired, and she's 74 years old. And, we have no, we're living off of our savings, our retirement. So we have limited income, and this is, this has been going on for years, and I've sort of been able to handle it when we had income, but we don't have income now. And so it becomes much, much more serious. Plus,
what does she say?
Plus, she's very sick, and it's hard, I would have to forcibly take her credit cards from her. And that's kind of a difficult thing. I'm really stuck.
Well, I know it sounds like you're really stuck. So what happens, just so I understand, what happens when you sit down and you say, dear, you are spending us into debt. You spend X thousand dollars a month, and we only take in X thousand dollars a month, minus $1,000. And every month, we eat away at this pot of money.
I have had that conversation on so many occasions.
What does she say?
And she says, I will stop. I won't do anything more. Promise, won't do any more. 5 days later, she's back spending.
There is a point in time, even with her own credit cards, that you're going to have to do the unthinkable, which is you're going to have to take them away. Or if she can't, you may have to take away her laptop, if that's how she's buying it, or her iPad. These are difficult things to do. The other thing you may have to do is just completely separate the money. so that there isn't anything that gets paid for those. Because she had, if you haven't stopped this, what ends up happening is when she dies, you would think, well, it's her debt, I'm not going to be responsible. But the credit card companies will come and they will sue you and say, no, you benefited from those expenses. And unless you can prove that you did not benefit from those expenses in any way, shape, or form, they're going to hold you liable even though your name is not on that card.
Yeah, I'm not trying to, get out of paying, our bills. I'm just trying to figure out a way to stop the rush,
Do you have children?
Yes.
Have your children talked to her? Do your children know what's going on?
Her children, my stepchildren do more than my own children do. And they're not able to do anything. I mean, she's impervious to that.
But she has an illness. You recognize this, right?
She has an illness, and I mean,
not physically. I mean, she's got
a mental.
That's right. She has a mental problem.
Yeah.
It's an addiction to shopping. It's a recognized psychological problem.
And actually, at the root of my call is, how do you get help on that addiction?
You want to know how to break it?
Well, where do I start?
You start by
what type of person do I call? Get help? What programs do I enroll in if I can?
Well, the first
how do I stop the addiction?
Right,
it is an addiction.
It is an addiction. So there are. It's like going to Alcoholics Anonymous, right?
Right.
And there are psychiatrists and psychologists who can help with it, who specialize in it, and you have to look at your local health centers and ask around and start getting some referrals. But ultimately, you're going to have to, until she comes to terms with that, you're going to have to take away, like a gambling addiction, right? You can't leave somebody in front of a slot machine and
right.
just hope that the psychiatrist and some medication is going to get her to stop pulling the handle.
That's what I've told her off and on. I've used that same analogy. You don't leave whiskey in front of a alcoholic, and you don't leave credit cards in front of a person with the addiction, spending addiction.
But that's what you've done by leaving her with her computer or her iPad and her credit cards. You've done exactly that.
Right.
And you have to, for her own good, not just the good of your house, your financial house, but for her good too, you have to take
right.
away the tools of her addiction and get her some psychological help. And it's going to be hell. But you have avoided, and I talked about this at the beginning of the last hour, when you look at rebuilding your house, number one is recognize where ground zero is. And I would say you're right there. But number two is take your pain today. You have been pushing off the pain day. And now you've gotten to the place where it is so incredibly painful that you picked up the phone and you called me today. And I'm telling you, Jerry, that you have to take the pain today. Because the longer you put it off, the more painful it gets. And the
yeah.
more serious and damaging the consequences of putting that pain decision off.
Yeah, you're 100% right. And I guess I've just avoided that.
It will destroy you. It will destroy your money. It will destroy your family. It will destroy everything that you have worked your whole life for. And it doesn't mean you don't love your wife. I think if you do this, what it shows is you love her incredibly because you want to save her. And that's incredibly sweet. But you're going to need some help with this. and your children and her children are grown-ups, and you need to invite them into this conversation because she is going to be in a lot of pain and the family is going to be in a huge amount of pain right now, and you've got to help get beyond it, and you have to help them be a part of the solution. Because in this case, if they're not part of the solution, they're going to be part of the problem. And you have to get in the way and make sure they understand. There's so much at risk right now. So much. And you've got to get them on board.
Okay, it's been helpful.
I'm in your court.
Have somebody just kind of reaffirm a lot of things I've been thinking.
Oh, yeah. This has got to stop. And it's got to stop this week. Before there's any more damage to her, to the two of you, to your larger family, to your finances, you've got to draw a line in the sand and say, this is what ground zero looks like. This is the worst of it. And I'm going to take my pain today, and I'm going to move forward, and we're going to get better. And I promise you, it will get so much better. But you have to commit to it. You've got to bring the family in. You've got to face her down and say, this stops now. Take away the credit cards. Take away the laptop. Bring in somebody who can talk to her about this addiction and find out what pain in her life this solves. Because nobody goes through this kind of addiction without trying to medicate some deep psychological pain. And I've seen it over and over again. It destroys families. But when you can get down to where the pain starts, that's where the healing begins. And it sounds ridiculously trite, but I'm telling you, it's true. This is what she's doing. So somewhere deep, way before she ever met you, this has been going on for a long, long time. And then it becomes a habit. And you've got to figure out a way to dig in and break that and get her to recognize where she needs to be. So that all of you are on the same page and all of you are rebuilding your house together. And that's how she's going to get well.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Let me know what happens, Jerry. I care and I think you can do this. I know you can do this. I know you can make it better for everybody. And it takes a huge amount of strength. But you strike me as the kind of man who has that strength. And you've been, I know it, because you've been dealing with this, it sounds like, for decades. And what you're going to do now is channel the strength into a solution. And you're going to rebuild your family. 404-872-0750 is our number here at the station. 18 minutes past the hour. John joins us on the line from New Jersey. Hey, John.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you rebuilding your house today?
Well, I actually am not rebuilding the house. I actually saw and read your articles that are printed in the Burlington County Times in New Jersey.
Okay,
and
great.
I'm under a slight situation where my father passed away a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And she left me and my mom in a situation where we still have a mortgage on his office that is tied in with the mortgage of my mom's condo.
How is it tied mm-hmm. together?
It's just something that Dad worked out with the mortgage company at the time.
Okay.
You know, it's actually, I don't think it's actually tied together, but the mortgage for his office and the mortgage for my mom's condo are with the same mortgage company.
Okay.
And the problem that we're running into now is that my mom just had surgery 2 weeks ago and got diagnosed with cancer.
Oh.
But now she's out of work. You know, she's on a permanent or will be on a permanent disability because of this.
I'm sorry.
The question is, if we turn the keys to the office into the mortgage company, will we be penalized by them with what's owed on the condo?
So you have to, and they use real estate residential attorneys in New Jersey. you've got to get a real estate attorney to look at the document or the documents that you think have tied everything together to understand what that looks like.
Right.
So from your what you've told me, it's hard to imagine how he managed to tie all this up.
Right.
So
I don't even know. My mom did not even know that that a second mortgage had been taken out on the office until after he passed away. And then she's like, "Well, I didn't know anything about this."
Right.
You know?
So you need somebody who can look at all the documentation and say to you, "This is the liability. This is what happens if you turn back the keys to the office." It sounds like an office condo, really.
It's actually in a building where there are multiple other businesses, and he owns one of the condos.
All right. So you need somebody professional to look at all of this and try and figure out where the liability actually lies and how it's going to get untied and what happens when it does get untied. And I can't do that for you because I don't know. But what I'm telling you is a real estate attorney will be able to look at it and help you understand what your options are. And it sounds like the situation is really dire because your mom is so sick. And I'm so sorry about that. And your father, it sounds like he left things undone. And I spent a good part of yesterday working with family friends in Connecticut whose father's in ICU and dying. No will, no last statements, nothing. A domestic partner, it's a mess. And when things are a mess, it's so hard for the family because all they want to do is cry and miss the person and prepare for the coming death. And dealing with all the paperwork is not as good. So get a real estate attorney, get all the documentation together, and figure out what your options really are and what the liability is and what the pain point is. And that's the best I can do for you. 404-872-0750 on the Elise Glink Show. We are going to give away a prize pack coming up. Stay tuned to News Talk WSB. It's 25 past the hour on the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. We have a WSB McDonald's weekend prize pack to give away. The value, $262. It includes a pair of tickets to the Gas South Broadway series, presentation of Sandy Hackett's Rat Pack Show, March 14th to the 17th at Cobb Energy Center, and a synthetic oil change courtesy of Braxton Automotive. Cool. All right, we're going to give that away to the fifth caller to the prize pack line. Pay attention here, folks. Different phone number, 404-741-0750, 404-741-0750. That is our prize pack line. So we're going to take the fifth caller. Be nice to Crystal. She's taking your calls today. Good luck. It's a good prize pack. All right. So when we come back, 404-872-0750, we have a bunch of people who have questions. Happy to take your call. There's a couple of open lines left. We are talking today about my five rules. If you are rebuilding America, there are five things that you have to do, right? Number one, get yourself to ground zero. Be honest about where you are. Jerry is a perfect example of that. Number two, take your pain now. Don't defer. It just gets worse. Three, make your strategic decisions. Decisions should be strategic. You have to understand what that's going to mean for you, not emotional ones. And whatever you buy, underbuy rather than overbuy. It's not about overpaying. It's about spending less than you could so that you have options and decisions later on. And number five, don't sign anything unless you've read every single word. My five rules for rebuilding your house. Start today. 404-872-0750. We're going to continue the conversation in just a moment. Stay tuned to News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on anytime at ClarkHoward.com at midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
It's 12:30. 12:35 on News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. There's such an active conversation going on right now on Twitter, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. From some of our regular listeners and people who are just, you know, tuning in for the first time today, listening to me talk about my five rules for rebuilding America. And it really means so much that you're paying attention and that you're interacting and that you're caring. Jerry's conversation and what happened with his wife is really affecting a lot of people. And they are, I'm just so grateful that my listeners care so much about everybody. And Jerry, if you're listening, we're all behind you. There's so many people online who are thinking about you and praying that you're going to get through this situation. I know you will, because you're going to get everybody on board. But, you know, the conversation is just amazing. So join it online, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K, and join the ThinkLink community. You know, sign up for the weekly newsletters. We've actually got two now. We have a news brief that comes out on Thursdays, and then the regular one comes out on Monday. In addition to that, I just am going to start putting up this week, we taped 16 or 17 brand-new real estate minutes. Those are going to start to go up on our YouTube channel tomorrow. And if you're not a subscriber to our YouTube channel, it's called Expert Real Estate Tips, you need to be, because the Real Estate Minute is now online, hopefully coming to a radio station near you very soon, so you'll be hearing it every day. But if you want to watch me do them online at Expert Real Estate Tips, that's a YouTube channel, or follow me on Twitter. I've just put up a link to it as well. But we have over 340-odd videos there, soon to be over 350 when we put up all of these minutes starting tomorrow. So join us there. 404-872-0750 on the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time. Let's start with yours. We're going to go back to the phones. Michael joins us on the line now. Michael, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Elise Glink Show.
Thank you very much, and I enjoy your program immensely. You've been a great help to many, many people.
Well, thank you for saying that, and thank you for being with us today. How can I help you rebuild your house?
We have got a situation similar to one that was called in earlier, where parents have left my wife and her sister a home along with other properties, real estate properties.
Mm-hmm.
They were in the position to where they did this many years ago, and they have rights to the house till they, you know, pass away. The father has passed away, the mother has not yet, but the whole thing here is, at the downfall of business in 2009, my brother-in-law went through some very bad times, ending up losing a business, now being sued by several people, large lawsuits.
Wow.
So we're looking at a way to possibly protect these properties by taking the property out of my wife's sister's name and her husband and putting them into just, you know, my wife with a quick claim deed.
Well,
it's a good thing.
All right, so let's jump in and talk about this for a moment, because did the parents give the properties to the sister, to your sister-in-law, your wife's sister, or to you and your wife and her sister and her husband? How did the passing come down?
Strictly the two sisters.
So the properties are already in the sisters' names, correct?
Correct.
So it may be not as hard as you imagine. Also, when they gave it to them, did they give it inside a trust?
Yes.
Are the properties still in the trust?
No.
Why?
They signed them over as a grantor, grantee type thing, and they have already been, the property is actually in the name of, you know, the two sisters. It's on the deed.
Right, but it's not a trust. All right, so what you may want to do is go back to a trust where your sister-in-law and your wife are the beneficiaries of the trust, and get the properties into a trust. Once they're into a trust, and if they've never been out of your sister-in-law's name, they most likely can be protected from creditors. These would be your brother-in-law's creditors. But you need some big legal advice here because you want to make sure that the transfer will do what you want it to do, mm-hmm. that the trust will protect you, and that you're not setting yourself up for even more pain. But you should do this tomorrow. You should have never taken those properties out of the trust. If they had been in a trust and the trust was there, you should have just left them in the trust, and then you could have designated other beneficiaries underneath your wife and her sister. And it would have stayed, you know, as a protected thing. But it may still be fine simply because it's never gone into, say, your sister-in-law and brother-in-law's names.
That's right.
So make, if it had been inherited, that could have always been separated out. With a gift, it may still be possible. But I want you to go and figure that out. Because what you want to do is, it's not that you don't love your brother-in-law. I'm sure you do.
Yes.
But his bad times don't need to infect the assets that everybody else enjoys.
That's what we're trying to protect, yes.
Right. So an estate attorney is what you really need here more than a real estate attorney.
Okay.
You may eventually need a real estate attorney to prepare documentation for the transfer of the properties, but the estate attorney should, I would think, be able to do that. And I want to make sure you get that done sooner rather than later, because lawsuits are funny things, and they'll go after whatever assets they think are there.
Right.
And you don't want to compromise that.
Exactly. Okay. Thank you very much. You've been very helpful.
You're very welcome, Michael. Thanks for listening to the show, and good luck with this. Let me know what happens. 42 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Glink Show, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time. 404-872-0750. If you're calling from out of state, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Happy to have those conversations with you. Edward joins us on the line from Virginia. Hey, Edward.
Elyse, thank you for taking my call. I read your article in the Washington Post here in the Washington area, and it seemed that in some of your articles that maybe you could be some help to me with the problem.
I'd be happy to try. What's going on?
Well, we owned a home for 12 years and fell behind in payments several times, and back in 2004 renegotiated the loan with City Mortgage, and it seems that at that time that renegotiation must have resulted in a debt to HUD of $17,000. My wife and I divorced in January of 2012. She had much of a problem as Jerry's wife, and we were always behind on our bills.
Is that why you fell behind in the payments to the mortgage?
Yes, I was giving in all the money and not really staying on top of how it was being spent, and it seemed that we were falling behind. So that the judge ordered that the home be sold when we were divorced in January of 2012, and that the debts be paid off from the proceeds of the home. Fortunately, we weren't underwater.
Mm-hmm.
And that after the bills were all paid, that the proceeds be split 80-20, with me getting 20%, my wife getting 80%. And that was done in July of 2012 with the sale and settlement of the home. Recently, however, HUD came after me and said that the $17,000 debt was not paid at the closing, and they've garnished my wages to over $1,000 a month, which is really upset my attempt to rebuild America and rebuild my life. My debts are now higher than my income.
Why? Let's stop there for a moment. Why didn't they also go after your wife? Because she doesn't work?
She does work, and I've talked to HUD and they've said it's a joint debt. But
and so are they going after both, you
no,
and she?
No, they've already garnished mine, and they said I'd have to work it out with her. Well, obviously, that's not a good solution. But
that hardly seems fair. Have you gone back to your attorney?
Well, actually, what I've gone to is City Mortgage, who provided the payoff amount, and I got a copy from them of what they provided to Bay Country Settlement, and they provided a payoff that was used at settlement that did not include the $17,000 HUD debt.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back to City Mortgage and talked to them, and unfortunately, the representative I talked to said, "What's HUD?"
Oh,
and
God, really?
I couldn't believe that a mortgage company representative would ask that question. And then it went back to the settlement company and said, why didn't you have this information at closing? Because obviously somebody should have done due diligence on this issue and had everything as far as the debt. And they said, well, City Mortgage didn't provide us the $17,000 debt at that time. So, as I said, I'm going to City Mortgage, I'm going to the Bay Country people, and they're both sidestepping and say, gee, I'm sorry that that wasn't included. It probably should have been. And my question is, I don't have a lot of money for an attorney, and if I borrow money for an attorney, is it likely that one of these two companies is liable for the error? And is there a chance that I can recover my legal fees from the company that's found liable for this error at closing? I paid for title insurance at closing table, and surely somebody should be responsible for the error here.
The answer is I don't really know. And I don't know because there's so much caught up in this web of legal mess, and I'm not a lawyer, so I don't want to play one on the radio.
Okay.
But what I will say to you, and I will share this with Sam, who I write those articles with, who is a real estate attorney. The problem that you're having is sometimes that they don't know that there is going to be a deficit to HUD. And I'm not quite sure why that came up, but it's possible that number one, there really isn't a $17,000 debt to HUD that's owed. And if there was, that it should have just been eliminated and not, they should not have been able to come back after you. And I'm not quite sure why that happened, because you probably used a real estate attorney to help sell that property. And it should, something should have come up where they literally said, you know, we're done. Now, one thing that you may be able to do is, instead of hiring an attorney to do this, it's $17,000. You may be able to go and sue in small claims court and get City to negotiate this, pay off HUD, and move on where it's whatever they've paid, because I'm sure it's been a couple of months, so you're now paying $1,000 a month.
That's correct.
And in 17 months, you would be done with this, supposedly. But there may be a way to at least cut off the bleeding now and suspend it during this lawsuit that you could just do, which would be inexpensive. So you could get an attorney to help guide you a little bit with what you would sue for, but at least you could get City's attention. Because it sounds like there was a mistake made. I'm not saying you don't owe it. I'm just saying there may be another way to slice this. And an hour or two of consultation with a really smart attorney, a real estate attorney, may be enough to figure out what's going on. But title insurance, this wouldn't probably fall within the purview of title insurance.
Okay.
That's not what title insurance is. But there may be a way to figure out what it is that has to be paid, and then you can sue, or it may be that you end up having to sue your ex-wife to pay 80% of it.
Mm-hmm.
Since she got 80% of the money. Or to get HUD to go after both of you with an 80-20 split, which was dictated by the judge. So that's the advice you need to get right now, is how do you rejigger this so that you're only responsible for 20% of the $17,000, assuming that's you have to pay that,
mm-hmm.
and then you get your ex-wife to pay her fair share. And if she doesn't have it, then you're going to probably be in a bad situation, because they'll come back to you and say, you know, we've garnished her wages, or she's not working, and it was a joint debt. And when it's a joint debt, you owe the whole of the joint debt, right? You owe a $100,000 mortgage with your ex-wife. You owe the $100,000. She owes the $100,000. You both owe $100,000. So if they can't get it from each of you, they'll go for whoever they think they can get it from, which doesn't sound fair, but that's... Again, if you read every word of the mortgage that you signed, that's pretty much what it says. So I think you need to spend an hour or two with an attorney to figure out who it is you want to sue in small claims court, whether it's going to be your ex-wife, whether it's going to be City, or you know the other company that was the mortgage servicing company, and figure out where the mistake might lie. And then you're not paying for an attorney going forward, but you are hopefully getting back to a place where you can build your future. Stay tuned for more. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Elise Glink. This is News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find Elise Glink live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
Yeah. 55 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink. This is the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays, 11 to 1. Rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. 404-872-0750. Follow me on Twitter, at Glink. Sign up for the free weekly newsletter, thinkglink.com. Check out, subscribe to our YouTube channel, Expert Real Estate Tips. We are putting up 16 real estate minutes this week. They are awesome. And hoping to get it on the air every single day, just where you are. 56 minutes past the hour, Donna joins us on the line. Donna, how can I help you rebuild your house?
I have a question about home equity loans versus refinancing.
All right.
We have $150,000 home equity loan. We have plenty of equity in the house. I just want to make sure that when we refinance, we're going to roll a credit card into it as well. And the payment matches about what we're paying in debt now, but lower interest. So I think it's the right thing to do, but I'm not sure I'm doing the math right.
So let me give you my four tips for a home run refinance.
Okay.
You ready?
Yes, ma'am.
Number one, you lower the interest rate.
Yes, we're doing that because of the credit card.
All right. Number two, you lower your monthly payments.
It's about the same, but we're paying lower interest on the credit card. I mean, if the interest is so high on the credit card, rolling it into the lower interest mortgage.
So overall, your payments will be less because you're going to pay less on the interest on the credit card and less on the home equity loan itself.
Yes. Okay. I hear what you're saying.
So it's lower overall.
Yes.
So if you were paying $2,000 a month, you're going to pay $1,700 a month because you've now changed where the credit card payment is.
Gotcha. Yes. Okay. I knew I was missing the math piece. I think that was it.
Okay. Number three, shorten the loan term. So if you were paying it off in 10 or 15 or 30 years, you're finding a way to pay it off sooner. So in your case, if you're now saving a little money, plowing that back in will allow you to get that debt cut down a lot faster. And number four, manage your closing costs. If you can manage your closing costs so that you're paying them off with your savings, right, quote unquote your savings, in a year or less, it's a big win. For you, since you're rolling into credit card debt, that shouldn't be a problem. So when you do the home run refinance, those four things, if you can get all of them, it's a home run. If you can get three of them or two of them, it may still be very worthwhile doing. But all four of them, and it sounds like you have all four, Donna, that's a home run. All right, the music's starting. All of you guys who are hanging out online, come visit me online because I can't get to your calls right now. The show's over. They only give me 2 hours, but I'm going to be back again next week. March 3rd, we're going to do a live tax show. You can ask your tax questions in this, the most confusing tax year I think we've ever had in the 15 years I've been on the air. Stay tuned for that. It's March 3rd. I'll be back next week. In the meantime, find me online. Have a great day, everybody, and go build your own house.